Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Finally, the Trump administration has started its pitch to end the Ukraine conflict. Needless to say, it did not go down well with the European establishment, addicted as they are to this war. Will Trump's plan work? Will the Russians agree? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Dmitry Babich. He is the deputy foreign editor at Komsomolskaya Pravda Daily. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let's start out with George in Budapest. Well, we've been waiting for this for a long time. It was a campaign promise, and now Trump is making his move, as it were, here. Obviously, I'm making reference to what was going on at the Munich Security Conference. We had Pete Hegseth, which kind of surprised us all. He eloquently delivered the administration's position with quite a bit of forcefulness, I would say, much to the gloom and doom of the Europeans. George, from the outset, I think it's an interesting gambit that the Trump administration is essentially saying Ukraine has to make territorial concessions. The U.S. is not backing Ukraine membership in NATO, and no commitment of American troops in some kind of post-war, post-conflict environment where Article 5 could be invoked. That's a pretty interesting starting point. I mean, that wasn't even up to negotiation, which the Europeans found appalling. What do you get from that? Because there's a lot of hard negotiations ahead. There's a lot of details. There's a lot of ambiguity out there. But from the get-go, the Trump administration is making it very clear it does want this war to come to an end. George.
There's no question. I agree, Peter, that the Trump administration has made clear it wants this war to end. And that is even clear from the telephone conversation that took place between Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. They agreed on a meeting in Saudi Arabia. It's going to be obviously a very high-level negotiating team on both sides. And what was interesting from the Russian readout of this conversation is that the United States pitched to Russia a general détente. I mean, he was saying, well, let's sit down, work out our differences. And at least according to the Russians, the Americans brought up a number of sore points with the Russians, the issue of the embassies and the normalization of the situation with the embassies and the consulate, and essentially the suggestion that the sanctions, unilateral sanctions that the United States imposed on Russia, could be up for negotiation. But that's where the problem lies, because I think this is what the Trump administration wants. They're saying, look, we're offering Russia a detente, an improvement of relations. But then we want something in return from Russia. Basically, we want Russia to end this war now, as a ceasefire now, armistice now. And I think that's going to be a difficult one because, Russia would then have to say, well, our issues have not yet been resolved. I mean, the issue certainly with the four oblasts, they're not in fully in Russia, under Russian control, and we want a permanent, guaranteed somehow security for us, and that isn't up for discussion. So it's going to be very, very tricky going forward.
Yeah, Dima, George is absolutely right. I mean, in some circles, I think it's fair to say there was euphoria that there is light at the end of the tunnel. There is a commitment here. But as George rightly points out, the war is continuing and there is no indication it's going to stop anytime soon. So we're really kind of in a levitated state here. We have intentionality. We know where we want to go. George is absolutely right. A form of detente, which has been so grossly absent in U.S.-Russia relations. So, I mean, there's a vision, but, what's the next step? Because the war is continuing. Dima.
Well, it's clear that the next step is going to be negotiations about negotiations. Obviously, Marco Rubio and Sergei Lavrov are not going to sign some kind of an agreement that would end this war. They can agree on future talks that may bring that result. And the danger is that the ideologues will get involved in these negotiations. Of course, the main ideologues are the current European leadership and at least parts of the Ukrainian establishment. So basically, I was very reassured by the phrase that we heard from Keith Kellogg yesterday in Munich. He said that, I quote, "What we don't want to do is get a large group of people in discussion." He also added that the EU may not be at the table when the US holds talks with Russia. Well, that would be very, very good, because this is what you need for a good negotiations. You need to concentrate on the point. You know, this is why diplomats wear formal clothes. That's why they never talk about ideology. They talk about business. You know, here's what we have. We have this conflict, which is, to my mind, utterly ideological. No one gained economically from the war in Ukraine, except maybe parts of the military industrial complex and the crazy Ukrainian nationalists like Parubiy, who suddenly, instead of being at the margins of Ukrainian politics, were elevated to high positions. Russia lost, of course, because we understand. Ukraine became so much poorer. It lost most than all the others. Europe has lost its profitable relationship with Russia. America lost. And Trump is a pragmatic person. I don't want to idealize him. He is not that idealistic peacemaker. He wants to make money, and he is very much irritated by the fact that the US spent $113 billion on support for Ukraine. He has some wrong information. He thinks that he can compensate them by Ukrainian natural resources. That's not going to happen. Any economist will tell you that. But at least he may stop losing. You know, this is what he can achieve. Stop losing from that war.
Dima, since you're bringing up the word losing, Georgia, Ukraine has lost this military conflict. Okay, how it ends, again, we still don't know, but we know the outcome. But the other big loser is Europe in all of this. I mean, the Americans went to Munich and basically lectured them, even hectored them, okay? Your vassal states, vassals are not invited to the table. You accepted that status, so don't complain now, George.
That's exactly right. And what Kellogg was suggesting when he said, well, we had, in the past, we had too many people at the negotiating table, was referring to the Minsk process. And one must remember, the Americans weren't involved in Minsk. That was a European process. So that could have been the opportunity for the Europeans to throw their weight in and to resolve this. So, you know, it was under the French, German auspices and the Minsk process. They didn't do anything. You know, year after year, the Russians issued their complaints and said that, you know, no one's doing anything about implementing Minsk, and they didn't bother doing anything. So now they demand a seat at the table, having manifestly failed for 8 years to do anything with that seat at the table. But the European aspect of it could be quite dangerous, because they're absolutely rabid. There's going to be a meeting on Monday involving all the high-level European states. Yeah, or Macron, there's going to be Paris, Macron will be there, Starmer, Maloney.
I'm sure the Trump administration is shaking in their boots.
Exactly. But they, you know, they're so demented that they intend to be somehow involved in Ukraine. And that's where it starts getting very dangerous, because if they
I think that there's also a corollary to that, Dima, is that the American delegation made it very clear, or maybe not crystal clear, but Europe, your role is to clean up the mess, because American troops are not going to be there. There's not going to be the kind of security guarantees that you would like to have. Without American security guarantees, the European ones are essentially useless. I mean, what, the UK and Ukraine have a 100-year security agreement? I mean, this is just comical stuff here. So Europe is paying the cost for its negligence. And I think both of you were surprised. I certainly was, to hear Pete said talk about the Minsk process. We've never really heard a high-level American official actually mention it in the context that he did. There's a learning curve over there someplace at the Pentagon. Dima.
Well, it's amazing how the European elite is uninventive, you know, in its response to Trump's moves. Actually, what we hear is, oh, Munich again. I mean, stop doing that. How long have you been saying that? You know, I think for 30 years, every attempt to have dialogue with Russia was met with the words about Munich. And even though Russia was not present in Munich in 1938, it was something between the Germans, the French, and the British. So again, alternative to Trump's Russia appeasement. That's from Project Syndicate. In Munich, Vance attacks Europe. That's Le Monde. How was Vance attacking Europe? He just said the truth, you know. Europe, people are being imprisoned for expressing opinions which do not fit this terrible ultra-liberal ideology, you know. To arrest, to put in jail a person for praying next to an abortion clinic, that's terrible, you know. No one did it before. So basically, what we see is that Europe is, I quote Trianovosti, at the same time bloodthirsty and powerless. Bloodthirsty because Europe is the only party here that wants the war to continue. You know, they and Zelensky and his clique, they want the war to continue because they exist. They hold on to their.
Well, position. I mean, and Dima, I mean, you know,
and powerless doesn't... because it can't win this war.
Yeah, but it can't be for material reasons. Obviously, there's an ideological element. We can't allow the Russians to win. That's not, George, that's not thinking geopolitically. This is one of the biggest problems we've had with this conflict. But I think what they're really worried about, and we'll talk about it in the second part of the program as well, is that NATO is at stake here, and they all know it.
NATO is at stake here because this is why we're in an unprecedented situation whereby the Americans are saying, we want out, we want to bring this thing to an end. The Europeans are saying, no, we want to keep it going. But then the question is, well, how are you Europeans are going to keep it going without the Americans? And Zelensky came along in Munich Security Conference and said, oh, well, you got to come up with a European army. But that, you know, that certainly isn't feasible now. But so that is very, very unusual because in the past, it's always been the other way around. We had belligerent Americans and the Europeans will say, no, calm down, reassuring everything. But this time it's the Europeans that are belligerent. The Americans, they want out. But I think why it's dangerous because for Russia, it doesn't provide any security guarantees. If you've got a European continent.
All right. We're going to continue talking about NATO in the second part of the program. Gentlemen, I'm going to go to a quick break. And after that quick break, we'll continue our discussion on Russia, Ukraine, and the Trump administration. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Dima, we've talked about the Trump administration's pitch. We've talked about the European reaction to it. Now, on this program, we're going to talk about something that hardly anyone else talks about, and it's very important. What will the Russians settle for? Because, you know, NATO expansion, not one inch east. We had NATO destroy the former Yugoslavia. NATO has been causing trouble all around the world. It's already been mentioned on this program, the Minsk process. Then we can add to that Istanbul. Informed viewers will know exactly what we're talking about. The Russians don't want to get fooled again. And living here, the Russian people don't want to settle for less. There's a lot of pressure on the Kremlin, on President Putin.
No, you're absolutely right. And actually, the policies of the European Union are based on two absolutely erroneous, wild suppositions. The first one is that, I quote, Putin will not stop in Ukraine. He will attack the Baltics and Poland after that. That's the first wild supposition. The second one, if we topple what they call Putin's regime, everything will be so much nicer. You know, there will be negotiations with Russia. There will be a peaceful government with Russia. It's absolutely wrong. You know, if Putin is replaced by some other government, that government is going to be a lot more belligerent towards Europe because the majority of Russians are very angry at Europe. A lot of people expected Europe to play the role of mediator during the Minsk process and even before, and Europe always failed us. And now people see, you know, people see how Angela Merkel is saying, we never were serious about Minsk Accords. We just wanted Ukraine to get time. Do you think people here forgot it? No. They watch it, they hear it. Russians have access to European media. A lot of us speak foreign languages. Now there are Google translators if you want to check what she said. So indeed, my only hope is that the President Putin's power will be important enough to calm the hotheads here and still agree to some kind of compromise. What it will be, I don't know. What I can say is that Putin never wanted other countries' land. He, you know, I remember his quote, we already have everything that we need here. What we need from Ukraine is security, neutrality. And obviously, an agreement will have to be achieved at some point, not only with the United States, but with NATO also. Because if Europe remains belligerent, if Europe remains threatening, that won't suit the electorate here. Not President Putin himself, but the electorate.
Yeah, but see, George, that's what gets, that's the crux of it all here, is the root causes of it all. And of course, all of us want to see this carnage come to an end. And I repeat what I've said for 3 years, a conflict that never, ever should have happened in the first place. My goodness, as we're talking about this, can you imagine them, the soldiers in the field wondering who's going to be the last one to die as politicians talk? That's a horrific thought to contemplate. And but the issue that really needs to be addressed is security for all, for all. And the West has to relearn this. They have forgotten about it because they've been ideologically blinded. And Russophobia blinds people into doing very, very dangerous things that we've seen for the last 3 years. Security guarantees for all. We're all old enough to remember the Helsinki process. We're not so old that we remember Yalta, but we need something, Yalta slash Helsinki process. Trump is in a hurry. You can't get this kind of stuff done quickly, George.
No, you can't. And you're absolutely right, Peter. What Russia is looking for and has been ever since it issued those two documents in December 2021 is Helsinki 2.0. The problem there is that the Europeans are absolutely in no mood for any kind of a Helsinki process. So even if some kind of a global conference were arranged under the auspices of the United States, it wouldn't do anything. I mean, they wouldn't agree on anything. All that would happen is that the Europeans would be there, you know, the Kaja Kallas and Ursula von der Leyen and, you know, whoever is the German chancellor, you know, Friedrich Merz, and they would spend their time yelling and ranting and raving against the Russians. They wouldn't agree to anything. And that's why that, you know, if one thinks of what would Russia settle for, I mean, obviously there's the issue of the four oblasts, which, you know, which Russia is not in full control of. That's one thing. And then there's the long-term security guarantees. And it's very hard to see how it can get those long-term security guarantees given the mood in Europe. The danger, however, for Russia is that if it says, no, we're not settling for this, then essentially, this would have been an opportunity loss, because there's no question, you know, the United States is doing something that Biden didn't do, Obama didn't do. The United States is now offering some kind of a partnership and a removal of obstacles to a fruitful relationship. If you say no to that, then, you know, Russia would be in a very difficult position, because I think then the Trump administration, particularly Trump himself, mercurial as he is, would then, you know, resume hostility and then some, even more intense than the Biden administration did. So it's a very difficult situation for Russia. Russia has to really, you know, maneuver very, very cleverly, very astutely, and very diplomatically to keep the Americans on board while ensuring it's a long-term security interest.
Dima, tell our audience how Russians have thought about this conflict and the being able to contemplate that it could relatively soon come to an end. We never really hear much about what Russians think. Russians are always talked at, but they're very rarely listened to. So give us a flavor of the time right now.
Well, right now the mood is pretty optimistic because for the first time in 3 years, we have good news, you know, about at least some kind of dialogue restarted between Russia and the West. And of course, no one in Russia is happy about people dying. And there was no, and there is no ethnic hatred towards Ukrainians. Relations between Russians and Ukrainians are very much like relations between the French living in France and the French living in Belgium. You know, there may be a few jokes, but generally speaking, there was never any hatred. This war was ideological from the start. You know, it was a war of the West against Russia. And right now, what we demand, you know, these four regions in Ukraine, we need them first because they have always been populated by ethnic Russians. I mean, read history, how Russia was expanding to the south, fighting Ottoman Empire, how these areas in the Black Sea were populated by Russians from inside, deep inside Russia. And we need these for almost for security because Kherson is next to Crimea. Without Kherson, Crimea is always exposed. Basically, Zaporozhye is the link between mainland Russia and Crimea so that there can be transportation. And Donbas, you know, Donetsk and Lugansk, they earned their belonging to Russia. They suffered so much for 10 years, constant bombings, constant strikes from the Ukrainian side. They earned it the hard way. You know, they lost so many people. So basically, what Russia is requiring is a minimum. But everyone wants that conflict to end. And people are very angry at the so-called Russian liberals, emigre liberals, who are now saying, oh, no, no, no. You know, when they were leaving, they said, we hate the war so much, we can't stand it. And now they say, don't stop the war. Continue. You know, Ukraine can't lose. So these people are losing the remnants of their credibility.
Yeah, well, that's one good thing about all of this. The Russian liberals have so marginalized themselves, they've turned into a national and international joke, a topic for another program. George, it's been talked about, I think it's just very vague right now, and maybe part of this euphoria, that Trump and Xi could be in Moscow on May 9th, the 80th anniversary of the defeat of fascism in Europe. That would be that would be of a magnitude of the fall of the Berlin Wall, George.
That would be it would be an audacious move. Something Trump would like. I mean, he does like bold moves. I have a feeling he's not going to do that. It would just cause so much consternation. In Washington and in Europe, but it's quite possible that there will be some senior U.S. Representation, you know, maybe at the level of Marco Rubio, maybe at the level of Keith Kellogg, but there will be some U.S. Representation. And that in itself would be a significant move. And again, you know, it does put Russia then in a very tricky position because, hey, the Americans are making all these moves. But they want something in return. They want you to end this war, even though Russia has at this stage not accomplished its goals. So therefore, it only adds a certain measure of pressure on Russia in how to respond to what would obviously be a very, you know, generous offer by the Americans. Hey, look, we recognize all of your suffering. We recognize, you know, all the terrible things that have been done to you. And, you know, we're here. So now we want something from you in return. You know, Trump really wants this peace agreement. He wants it done, and he wants it done soon.
Dima, how did the former president of Ukraine, Zelensky, acquit himself in Munich? Because he threw quite a few temper tantrums. I mean, he feels that he's been spurned by the Americans, which I think is a fair assessment. But the countries that are courting him don't really. Are not significant. I mean, Annalena Baerbock, she can yell and scream all you want, but nobody really cares what she says. I mean, the Europeans will, you know, might marry him, but, you know, that's sloppy seconds, as we used to say in high school. Dima.
Well, Zelensky is becoming a sort of a suitcase without a handle for Europe, you know, for the Europeans, because they have invested so much in him. They gave him all kinds of orders. In France, there's a joke. It only remained to put him in the Pantheon, you know. to bury him in the Pantheon. The only problem, he's not a French citizen. So that was the only award he didn't get from Europe. He got all sorts of orders from Britain, from Germany, from France. And now it turns out...
I wonder how many passports he actually has. Exactly. That's a sidebar. Okay. Yeah.
But the problem is that he now feels himself cornered. So he makes contradictory statements like, oh, I'm ready to give Trump all the natural resources of Ukraine, all the land. Yeah. You know, it's like a bankrupt gambler, you know, who says, I have so much at home, you can certainly take it.
All right, gentlemen, on that note, he definitely was the big loser in Munich. Fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.